Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So, if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
With your Federal Reserve decision this afternoon, we can cross to D.C. with Mike McKee.
The Fed sees higher growth, stronger inflation, and slightly lower unemployment for 2024, but officials still barely see a median of 3 rate cuts for 2024. 9 of the 19 members, however, said they thought 2 or fewer rate cuts would be appropriate. 10 saw 3 or more. They did not change rates today. The dots move up a little bit next year. The median sees 2 cuts to 3.9% in 2025 instead of 3 cuts, 3 more to 3.1% in 2026, a slightly shallower path. The committee's median long run, the natural rate, also moves up to 2.6%. GDP is projected to increase 2.1% this year, a significant upgrade from the 1.4% in the December forecast. Growth is also higher in 2025 and 2026. Unemployment will end this year at 4%, Fed officials now say, instead of 4.1%. And core PCE inflation will fall, but only to 2.6% instead of the 2.4% seen in December. Headline inflation unchanged at 2.4%. The only change to the statement is job growth is no longer characterized as moderating. Language about considering any adjustment to the target rate, commitment to the 2% inflation target, is the same. The decision was unanimous. And finally, there was no mention of the balance sheet in the statement beyond keeping the $95 billion in Treasury and mortgage rate caps each month.
Mike McKee, I'm going to turn to the price action in a moment. But I've got one question I need to ask you right now. Let's go through what you just said again. So faster growth, lower unemployment, higher core inflation, then something jumps off the page. It's exactly the same median dot with some changes around the surface, I know, in and around. It's more nuanced than that. But ultimately, the exact same median dot than December, as December. Mike, can you make sense of that? How have we just revised growth higher, revised unemployment lower, and core inflation up for 24 and left the median dot unchanged?
Well, you have to look at it as the median dot because others did change their views around that dot, but nobody moved significantly higher to push rates up. One person did. They needed 2 to move it up, to move the median rate up. But as I noted, 9 of the 10 now say 2 cuts or less. So it is certainly possible if we see similar inflation and jobs numbers going forward that this could change again. And at the next meeting in June, when they put out a new forecast, they could go to 2.
I guess no wonder people are buying stocks right now. Mike, we'll come back to you in just a moment. On the S&P 500, positive by a third of 1%. Here's the price action for you. Stocks higher. On the Nasdaq, up by 0.4%. In the bond market, a rally at the front end. We're down about 4 basis points to 4.64 on a US two-year yield. And the dollar a little bit weaker here. The euro at 108.85. Brad, my first reaction to this, just to see faster growth for 2024, lower unemployment and higher core inflation, and a median dot. And we can get into the changes beneath the surface, I know, but a median dot that's unchanged in the face of all of that. If you're in equities at the moment, that sounds pretty bullish to me, doesn't it?
This is a Federal Reserve that suddenly, under the hood, seems to be accepting higher than expected inflation for a longer period of time, taking longer to get down to that neutral rate, because there is no other way to interpret all the numbers that you just laid out, hotter inflation than expected for the next couple of years, faster growth, and the fact that they're still planning for similar types of cuts highlights where the bias is right now for a Federal Reserve that still does want to cut rates.
If you're just tuning in, joining us around a table, Mohammed El-Erian is alongside us, together with Priya Misra, fixed income portfolio manager at JP Morgan Asset Management. Priya, I want to cross over to you. Just your first thoughts on the projections and the statement that we got just moments ago.
I think this is a Fed that really wants that soft landing to continue. They saw a path of that for that soft landing. Now, we have had better inflation data, higher inflation data than the Fed would have liked, I think, the last 2 months. But it's 2 months. You know, you just go back 4 months, we had really weak inflation data in November and December. Jan and Feb came in a little higher. I mean, it was never going to be a straight line down to 2%. I think the Fed is saying we're going to be patient. There's a long time between now and December. Those projections are December projections. That growth getting higher, I wonder if they're telling you the supply side's working, whether it's population growth, whether it's supply chains coming back. That's allowing growth to be strong. That's allowing the labor market to be okay. And the Fed is saying, be patient. We're going to get close to that 2%. It might take a little bit longer. We can start normalizing.
Well, it's fueling a rally in gold. Gold is up by 0.6% off the back of some of this. Mohammed, your thoughts on what we've just heard from this Federal Reserve?
So I would have agreed with everything that she said, with one exception, which is a revision up in the PCE core to 2.6. So that puts me more in Lisa's camp. I think this is a signal, and the market is taking it as that they will tolerate slightly higher inflation for longer.
This is a reason why maybe if you look incrementally under the hood, you're seeing some inflation expectations over the longer term start to pick up just a little bit. Priya, from that point of view, does this kind of call, all things being equal, make you less enthusiastic about longer-term treasuries? If it seems like this is a Fed that wants to stick the soft landing regardless of what the data might be suggesting and even their own projections.
I would say the belly of the curve is still the most attractive, because, you know, whether they cut two times or three times, let's look at the total amount of cuts that's priced in. The neutral rate that the market is expecting, or the end point, is 3.75. I mean, the Fed's neutral rate is 2.5. The market is well north of that. So the part of the curve that's the most, I'd say, sensitive to the totality of rate cuts is that 5 to 10 year part. You're right, going out into the 30 year, there's term premium, there's supply demand. But I will say, if the soft landing continues, that $6 trillion sitting in money market funds starts to go into bond funds, equity funds, that's a positive for duration as well.
Mohammed, I have to say, this idea of potentially inflation being higher for longer, when is it kind of a sort of tacit acceptance of 2 point something, something you've talked a lot about, rather than looking for 2% as even a goal? If it takes 10 years, are we talking about 2% as the target anymore?
No, if it takes 10 years, then we're not talking about 2% anymore. I think you're getting that tacit agreement that in order to achieve the soft landing, we have to redefine what we think is the inflation rate that goes with that soft landing. It is not 2. I think it's nearer to 3 than it is to 2. And I think that this is a first step in this process.
I wish that these forecasts came out before the semi-annual testimony, because I do wonder how different the questions would have been. There would be serious questions now about how serious they are about getting inflation back down to target, Lisa. I think we have to go through these numbers. If you're just joining us, here they are. So I'll give you the number now, the forecast for 24, and you can compare it to December. As Mike McKee explained quite clearly, these are the median projections. 2.1% for GDP for 24. In December, it was 1.4. The unemployment rate for 24, 4%. In December, it was 4.1. PCE, 2.4. December, 2.4. Core PCE, 2.6. December, 2.4. The median dot for this year, unchanged at 4.6, implying 3 cuts. Now, Bramo, if you put that in front of any committee, any press conference, the obvious question for any journalist today, this afternoon, is how serious you are taking it to get it back to 2%. Because based on that, I mean, what are you taking seriously? And I think you absolutely nailed it. Are they beginning to tolerate something a bit above target?
Because ultimately, they want to prioritize the labor market over inflation data that is noisy. And they've talked about that in higher than expected. I will just say, if it came out before semi-annual testimony, I wonder if they'll ask about Bitcoin, because they probably wouldn't read it and then ask that question. But I'm glad that we have good journalists who are going to be asking that question in the press conference.
I think Senator Warren also sent another letter recently saying you should cut rates, like, right now.
Maybe they're listening.
Yeah, I'm sure that won't come up in the news conference a little bit later. Joining us to discuss this one is Dan Swank, the chief economist at KPMG, alongside Bank of America's Michael Gapin. Dan, I'd love your reaction just to these projections and what you've heard so far from this Federal Reserve.
Well, I think a couple of things are really important. First of all, the threshold to cut rates is a little higher than many people thought. But also, they're not talking about raising rates, even though they've had this higher inflation. And I do think, remember, they're going through their process of reevaluating where rates are, where what is the optimal inflation rate and what is the optimal policy path. And I think on hedging, what they're doing right now is they're saying we're willing to hold it higher for longer to get there. And, you know, Jay Powell really made this point that markets sort of ran off on in December, is that we don't think we need a recession anymore to get back to our inflation target. They're willing to be patient to get down there. I do think over time there is going to be a debate of what is the optimal inflation rate. Is it 2.5%? I don't think it's closer to 3, but I do think that there is something to the fact that they're willing to tolerate a little higher inflation for a little bit longer rather than higher unemployment. But they also are not willing to, you know, raise rates again. And I think that's important, too. But the threshold to cut is a little higher than it was prior to this meeting.
Dan, before I get Mike Gapin's thoughts, I just want to come back to you on something you said. We don't need a recession is very different to we don't want one. Do you think that is the difference this afternoon? Is this we don't need a recession to get inflation back to target, or we don't want one?
Oh, I think it's that they don't need a recession. They don't believe they need a recession, and they don't want one if they don't need it. So I think that's really the important two pieces to this equation, is that if they had to take a recession, you know, August 2022, bucket of cold ice on us at Jackson Hole, we'll take a recession if we need it to get inflation down. They're wrong. We didn't need it. They got pretty far. We've made enough progress now that to take a recession to make it the last of the last mile on this road on inflation, it's not worth it. And I think that's the hedge that you're seeing played out right now.
Mike, there also is a bit of a shifting in the goalposts, given the fact that we're looking at inflation that's coming down, but not coming down to 2%, and that's okay. That is considered success. How much is this statement and these projections really signaling an acceptance of higher inflation for longer to you?
So to me, it's not. I mean, I think they're looking at changing policy today or setting policy today and trying to get to their macro objectives over the 3-year forecast horizon. They're still saying we'll get there in 2026, which is the same story that they've given in the past. So yes, they have to tolerate a little higher inflation in the near term this year and next year. But I don't think they're giving up on that 2% goal. I think the flavor to the revisions to me says the median member is fully embracing this supply side story, and the economy can run faster, at least temporarily, without generating significant overheating pressures. So to me, that's the main message from the statement. Although I acknowledge with revising up the inflation path 0.2 this year, 0.1 next year, does say we may have to have a little higher inflation in the meantime, but I don't think they're giving up on that 2% target.
Priya, I see you vigorously nodding. You agree?
I completely agree. I think it's the supply side. That's the key. I think the entire soft landing was predicated on the Fed starting to ease. What they're telling us is that the starting point matters. We're at 5.5 on Fed funds, 10-year real rates at 2%. This is restrictive policy. Can they start to normalize, start to cut a little bit? Not the entire cycle. They don't have to cut consecutively all the way down to 2.5%. Start that process of normalization. If that means inflation's a little higher than their target this year, so be it. We'll get there in the next couple of years. If the supply side is working, it allows growth to be strong without creating inflation. Maybe the target is 2 to 3%. I don't think they can politically say it or have much credibility. It's like me saying I can't run a marathon when I can't run 100 miles, meters. But essentially, you know, when you can't reach your target, you should not change the target. But can they act as if you'll get there? We just push out that 2% a year out or 2 years out. I think that's what they're telling us. They're telling us, let's start. We're not committing. This is a data-dependent Fed. We can decide 25 and 26 cuts. We have a lot of time to do that. Let's just start the process now because we're in restrictive territory.
Priya, is that a reason to buy the 10-year Treasury or sell it?
The 10-year is harder. It's a reason
that's
to buy the
5-year.
for now, I would say buy it. Because I think this keeps demand coming into fixed income. I think the rates market was actually slightly hawkishly positioned into this meeting because of this debate between 2 and 3 cuts. The equity risk assets have been on a tear. I mean, there's been nothing stopping that. I don't think now anything stops it because unless the growth data weakens, the Fed's telling you they're willing to let this run. They're willing to ease to allow that soft landing to continue.
Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So, if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Dan, I'd love your thoughts on how to navigate this news conference when there is such a clear and obvious contradiction in the medium projections for 2024. How do you think Chairman Powell will explore this one in 16 minutes time?
He's going to be straight in and full on we're still committed to getting to 2%. He will not back off that kind of rhetoric, and I think that's important. He's saying we're just willing to, we've not changed the time frame. It's just going to come down a little slower than we thought. But also, there's a trade-off. You know, are we willing to create unnecessary pain, which is the Fed's word for euphemism for unemployment, for no reason? Do we really need that at this point in time? And I think what they're saying is no. We see, even in the labor market, we've seen a surge in immigration. We've seen a rebalancing in the labor market that's continuing. If the labor market were to get significantly softer, they would cut more rapidly. I think that's the other side of this that is interesting, is that we are starting to see sort of a division within the Fed on what are the balance of risks. But at the end of the day, the Fed is looking at this saying, we've had a pretty resilient economy, and there's no reason to derail a resilient economy as long as we're moving in the right direction. How fast we get there doesn't matter given the progress we've made. And I think, you know, it does matter if it's 10 years, like Mohammed said, yes, then it's not. But I think in the context of where we've been and what we're doing, this is sort of the way to think about it as a way to not cause undue pain in the economy for no reason.
So then I agree with you, and I think it's important that we're redefining patience. Going into this meeting, patience meant there's no rush to cut rates. Now patience means we may have to wait a little bit longer to get to 2%, or the path will be slightly different. But whenever I say that out, the reaction, the pushback I get is, but that's going to destabilize inflationary expectations. I don't think it will.
So
do you agree? Do you agree that will not?
Yeah, I'm with you, Mohammed, on this. I don't think it will, because we've seen remarkably anchored inflation expectations throughout all this. Now, if it did begin to, the Fed would be changing its tune pretty quickly, right? So this is something they're looking at. They're looking at that inflation expectations have been fairly well anchored, and that's a good sign for them that this is an okay path to take. But you're absolutely right. If we were to see inflation expectations shift on the basis of this, they'd have to change their tune and their strategy.
And Mike Gapin, I want to give you the final word going into this news conference. What would you look for?
Well, I think that the balance, so what's been discussed here is essentially, you know, do you really have a higher bar to start? Are you less confident about starting? We all seem to think that they still have a lot of confidence about disinflation remaining in place. So I would kind of address those two confidences. And honestly, I would try and tease out any information on the balance sheet discussion. The market, I think, needs to know, does taper start when overnight reverse repo balances are just low, or do we have to get to zero on that? I do think some information there would be helpful.
I think we'll be getting some questions on that, no doubt about it. Mike Gapin of Bank of America, the brilliant Diane Swank of KPMG. To the two of you, thank you. If you are just joining us, 13 minutes away from a news conference with Chair Jay Powell of the Federal Reserve. No change to interest rates, plenty of changes to the outlook for 2024. Faster growth, lower unemployment, higher core inflation, and then I guess the news is where there is no change. The median dot still implying three cuts for 2024. Now, you're all making me feel a little bit uncomfortable because you all agree with each other. So I've got to be that guy. And I think Lisa's on the same page as me. There's going to be a lot of people watching this that just think, well, hang on a minute. There's a huge contradiction in this, in all of this, that you've revised higher inflation, revised lower unemployment. You're looking for a faster economy and your projection for rates stays unchanged. That sounds super dovish. And I would say displays a real tolerance for above-target inflation, with equities at all-time highs and credit spreads very, very tight. Why are we wrong when people come on this program and say we are sufficiently restrictive? In fact, some people come on this program and say significantly so. Where is the evidence of that based on what we're seeing this afternoon? Where is the evidence, Mohammed?
So the evidence was given to you earlier by Kathy, which is if you just look at one price, which is where the policy rate is relative to where core PCE is, that's where you get the restrictive. But I agree with you. If you look at the financial conditions as a whole, these are very loose financial conditions.
One thing that I'm looking at in the statement is that the Fed took out language saying job gains had moderated. It really was the only change to the statement. Priya, from your perspective, everyone's been saying it's all about the labor market. If we don't see moderation in the labor market, and if it's actually reigniting, how are we going to get down to 2% from here? If maybe people are saying it's restrictive, the equity markets and the credit markets didn't get the message.
So I think the labor market is coming in better balance. It is moderating. It may not be moderating in terms of NFP numbers every month. It's moderating in terms of the quits rate. It's moderating in terms of job vacancies or average hourly earnings, ECI. You look at measures of wage inflation, it is moderating. I think that's what gives the Fed comfort that those inflation expectations will be anchored, that even if core PCE is a little bit higher, that's largely due to shelter or medical insurance. There's lots of little components of PCE that might be keeping it a little bit higher for longer. But as long as the labor market suggests that wages are moderating, I think it gives the Fed that confidence. And I would say for them to start to cut, I think cuts in 2024 are about inflation. PCE has gone from 5.5% to 3%. That's a reason for them to cut 75 basis points. Cuts next year are about growth in the labor market.
To me, Mohammed, this all goes back to your point, which is this a Federal Reserve that is operating without an overarching kind of thesis? They're basically just trying to cobble together people's different opinions and putting something out there, and then it sends us all in a tailspin trying to explain some sort of cohesive theory behind it and where we're going. Is that what this smells like? We're trying to sort of rationalize and come up with a theory behind this when it's really this person thinks this, this person thinks this, this is a good kind of happy medium. Go figure out what to do with this.
So if you want to be generous, you'd say this is such an uncertain economy. There's so many things changing on the structural side that they have no choice but to behave like they're behaving. If you want to be less generous, you'll say this is a Fed that actually took a view. It looked through data in 2021 and ended up really undermining its credibility. And therefore, it is very hesitant to do anything more than simply look at past data. So it's up to you whether you want to be generous or less generous.
The decision 9 minutes away. We'll find out if Robert Tipp is feeling generous of PGIM. He joins us now. Robert, you've had about 20 minutes to chew over this one. Your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that in terms of supporting what they've done, the rate of growth of the economy has been firm. The rate of inflation has come down at a headline basis by, you know, 5-6%, by nearly 3% on a core basis. The question came up earlier, do they want a recession? I think they want a soft landing. And they got conditions restrictive enough to bring down inflation quite a bit. Wage growth has decelerated. And they managed to do that, while unemployment has remained low, growth has continued. So I think it's been a very successful go. Did they start late? They did start late. But I think their pandemic practice, you know, was a little bit late. I don't think we have a lot of active central banker data points in terms of how you're supposed to do it. So I think so far, so good. And I think they're trying to hone the message so far here.
You sound very positive on all of this. Does that mean that you're a buyer of bonds of all durations because you think that ultimately they will get to the goal that they're looking for, along with the soft landing that's always been called sort of the unicorn that never arrives?
Well, I think the unicorn arrived in 2019 after the 2018 cycle. We were on our way to a soft landing. That was interrupted by pandemic, so maybe not. The late 90s, another soft landing after the 94 cycle. So I think they are there. I think the problem is a lot of people saw the dot-com bubble burst. They saw the GFC burst. And we don't have that kind of a backdrop now. And a lot of people are used to seeing funds rate up, funds rate down, crash, big problems. They're not used to seeing it. It doesn't mean it never happened. So it has happened, and looks like we're on our way there. Is this a buy point for fixed income? It is. Strategically, when you get to the end of the Fed rate hiking cycle, that's where you're going to be seeing the peak in interest rates. That was probably at the end of September last year. We are getting into that buy zone at the end of 2022. We remain there now. We're seeing a lot of support for the market. I think that's why the risk premiums in the market are so narrow, but they're likely to remain narrow. But I think overall, they're managing a very successful course here.
So, Robert, clearly a soft landing is your baseline. So speak a little bit to your level of confidence in that. And what do the tails look like if the Fed were to end up making a mistake? And we hope the Fed doesn't make a mistake. But if it were, what do you think the most likely mistake would be?
Right. Well, I think the data has not only bifurcated, it's trifurcated, right? So when you look at the employment, I was a little surprised that they went, you know, unidimensional, that it's, you know, a super employment market. I mean, the household survey has been flat for a few months. Unemployment rate has inched higher. Jobless claims at a state level have gone higher, triggering some people to wonder about whether the SOM rule is kicking in, signaling a potential recession. And of course, recessions are very hard to spot. So I think if there was going to be a problem here, you're not going to wake up one day and see data consistent with a 3.5% growth. But is it possible that we could have downshifted to 0.5% or percent? The job growth has really dropped off here, and you've lost a little bit of momentum. I think that's the more likely side that things could break on. Having said that, they're at 5.3%. They have tightened in real terms. They've made the case they didn't really want to do that. Now they're making the case they want more information. I think if they see slower data, that would, you know, trigger them to make some cuts, which would end up, you know, probably preempting a recession. So the most likely mistake would be kind of a growth recession, I would think. That would be the next most likely scenario there.
Today's show is sponsored by Public.com. That's where you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. While we can't say for certain it's the highest interest rate there is, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, a higher rate than Betterment, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So, if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty damn up there. This is a paid endorsement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA, SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosures/high-yield-account.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Priya, is there a downside to keeping inflation hotter for longer in the idea that this is actually really problematic for particularly lower income households? As Mohammed and I were talking about before the show, that this is sort of, you know, very much a tax on particularly people with lower income, specifically for those who are not in the market and can't capitalize on some of the gains that we see in the equity markets and could have a drag on the economy.
Sure. I think as long as the job market is fine and wages are running above inflation. So you talk about that inflation number being high. Where are wages? If wages are running 4% and inflation's at 2.5%, there's still positive real income growth. So I think as long as you have positive real income growth, that danger that you talk about is less of an issue. I do worry about the danger from, is the Fed easy for too long, or does it let the market run on this narrative of rate cuts? If inflation stays high enough at some point, the Fed's idea of continuous rate cuts is going to get questioned. And I think that no market is pricing that in. I think risk assets are expecting rate cuts this year, rate cuts next year. So if that inflation tends to be that last mile problem actually exists and we find we're unable to get close to 2%, I think then we should reprice all those long end rates higher, which is a problem for, you keep talking about credit spreads. Is that a problem for spreads or overall risk assets? I think that's the danger I worry about. I don't think we're there yet. It's noisy data, but I think that is something we should watch as we see the totality. And I hope Chip Powell's asked about that. Is it 3-month moving average? Is it core, super core, shelter?
Yeah.
I mean, we have so many variables. We look at revisions, wages. So hopefully he's asked, and I'm sure he's going to give a non-answer answer, which is everything, but maybe some nuggets in there. It's core and super core that we look at. I think just a sense of what gives them that confidence that overall we're going to get to 2%.
Frances Don of Manulife was on a program earlier on this morning. She said exactly the same thing. Just tell us what you're looking at. Seems to change from meeting to meeting. Robert, I know you've got to go. It's got to catch up, sir. Robert Tipp of PGIM going into this news conference. Mohammed, what do you want to hear from the chairman in this news conference? What do you want to hear him address?
What I'd like him is to come across as steady, to not get the market excited, to not cause undue volatility.
That's what you want. What do you expect?
It's hard. I would not like to be
at, not generous view.
I would not like to be at that podium after this outcome. I really would not like to be there.
Why is that? You think the members have put him in a little bit of a sticky spot?
Yeah.
To explain this?
I mean, you've repeated over and over again that the data revisions and the revision to projections are inconsistent with the non-change to the rate cuts.
How difficult is this going to be, Priya?
I think he's pretty good at doing that. I think he might, you know, at least try and get that delicate balance. I mean, he is going to be asked about financial conditions. They've eased a lot. I think explaining that's context dependent. Financial conditions by itself, the Fed should not have a view on. It's relative to the economy. We're in a soft landing. Financial conditions should be easier. Now, all he can do is explain the reaction function. We didn't get any data today. Explain the reaction function. They remain data dependent. I'm also looking for anything on QT, you know, because we have tax season coming up. That overnight reverse repo facility might get to zero in the next 2 months. What are they doing then? Are they getting close to tapering? They're going to debate this and we get a September 19 event. That's a big shock to the system. I don't think is priced in.
You know, John, everyone's been talking about the fact that we haven't heard about the balance sheet. It wasn't in the statement. And to me, this is actually a wild card because it's this sort of tacit tightening. They're going to allow it to run off for longer than people previously expected because this is one tool that they can do without getting into the rate cutting dance.
Does that help him today, considering that he doesn't think it's passive tightening and this is just watching paint dry? Does that help him?
Well, based on what Priya was just saying, it sounds like this might be watching paint dry as well, because she was basically like, he's not going to give an answer. And Mohammed's like, please don't shake anything up.
There's a reason that we're waiting for these comments, though, on the balance sheet. It's because at the last meeting, he sat there in the news conference and told us that it would be a big meeting for a conversation about the balance sheet. So maybe you hear about that up front when these comments begin.
Maybe that's one way to kill the mood in the room, just to talk about the balance sheet roll-off and just go into exact detail about what this means. There are a lot of questions. I want to hear financial conditions first and foremost. Exactly how he responds to that. Does he brush it off in the same kind of way that he did back in December?
It's not a major deal, but it's the beginning of something that could be a big deal. There's just a clear and obvious contradiction in the outlook for 2024. I think if you see a repeat of that through the year, there's going to be more and more questions about how willing and how they are really focused on, whether they are really focused on getting that inflation number back towards 2%.
Except it goes back to Priya's analogy, which is your target can be to run a marathon. But if you don't really run at all and you just, you know, run a mile a day and you don't plan to do it until 2046, is that really your goal anymore? And I think that that's sort of one key question here as we talk about what is an inflation target that we're looking at that's 2%.
It's a complicated spot for the chairman. We've got equities at all-time highs as he's about to open that door and sit in front of that lectern and talk to us about the outlook for rates. Equities at all-time highs, and at the same time, they're revising their inflation predictions higher and also still forecasting the same amount of cuts for 2024. I think that's a sticky spot for any Fed chair to walk into any room and speak for 60 minutes on this subject.
Which is the reason why he will probably say we're data dependent, which also means nothing to a lot of people who say, what are you looking at? This is a very difficult moment as Jay Powell walks to address all of the complexities that we are facing.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.